And speaking of the city, I have the mayor of the city of Port Townsend on the line, I believe. Michelle, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Paul.
Michelle Sandoval, thank you for being on Filter.
Yeah.
I'm sorry it took so long to ask you, but, you know, I kept thinking, I'm like, yeah, because full disclosure, Michelle owns the company that I work that I hang my license at. So I was like, man, if I bring Michelle on like too quick, people will be like, yeah, Paul's just like, you know, he's just self-promoting. So, you know, we had to like have a few months go by before we bring Michelle on. But now we'll bring Michelle on all the time. You can be on every week, right? You got a lot of free time these days.
I got just so much free time, Paul, you know. I got nothing better to do.
Right, yes. And neither do I, apparently. So here we are, thankfully.
So why did you call your show Filter?
Well, oh, that's a great question. And I get it a fair bit. And I don't, so the story goes is that Ruby, you know, asked me to do this show. And I was like, okay, I have to think of a good name. And it was like the first name I threw out. And I said, you know, like, what about Filter? Because it's like, you know, maybe my filter of what's important in Jefferson County. And she was like, that's great. You know, don't even think too much about it. Just make it Filter. I love it. And it was done that way. You know, but it doesn't necessarily quite, you know, work that way. And my favorite rendition of it was Finn O'Donnell. Said that, is it called Filter? Cause you don't have one. So the show is my filter. I mean, that seems like it's possible as well. I don't know. It's stuck. It's here. You know, I can't imagine changing it at this point because I'm just too lazy.
It's a good name.
You know, if I come up with somebody else, like, you know, I do love the whole 90s, like unfiltered or you know, I don't know. Maybe we should call it uncensored. Uncensored with Paul Rice, except I'm so censored here by the FCC. Damn you, FCC. Just kidding, FCC. Take it back. All opinions, as is frequently stated on this show, are my opinions. And I actually have no problem with the FCC for the most part. And I will agree to abide by all their rules.
I hope they're listening.
I'm sure they are. They're really on. If they're not listening, then somebody who wants to report me to the FCC is probably listening. So, you know, but you know, I had somebody swear on like the second episode and I was freaked out. And you know, what you do is you just like, you explain it and you write a letter. You know, like you write a letter to the FCC saying like, hey, here, this happened and I'm sorry about it. You know, I'm sorry I polluted the airwaves like this.
Yeah, it doesn't happen in real life. So I'm really sorry that we allowed it to.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody ever swears in real life.
Nope.
But you know, I am.
Nobody I know.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who swears. And you know what? If you do swear, you really just need to like think about the children. think about the children. I am trying. So when KPTZ moves to its new studio, which you can, listeners, you can help us support us in doing that by going to kptz.org and clicking donate now. When we move to the new studio, I'm hopeful to get a rap show. Yeah, Yo KPTZ Raps. And it would be late night, so we would be able to have a modicum of foul language on there. So that's a goal. And you know, the FCC would be fine with that. As long as, you know, the kiddos are asleep, they're okay.
Well, good.
So, Michelle, tell us, I know you pretty well, but maybe some of our listeners, don't realize just, you know, you've been in this community for a long time. You've been politically active in this community for a long time. Having been an elected for a number of years and involved, you know, really in politics and PT since the 90s. That's correct, right?
Yes.
So, can you give us your little biopic, a little short blurb about, you know, I don't know how you came to Jefferson County and Port Townsend and what made you decide to run for office and become politically active here?
Well, I think I was always politically aware. And my husband and I had our first date, the election that Ronald Reagan became president.
Yuck.
And so that started our relationship and our conversation, a very long conversation on that day. And so it was always near and dear to my heart to be politically active. I don't know that my family was that politically active. My brothers and sisters were, not necessarily my parents. But I came to Port Townsend after owning a couple of restaurants and a catering company in California. And when my son Dakota was born, all of a sudden I realized that California wasn't the same landscape that it had been when I was raised. And I wanted to find a more rural area and one that was safer and one that I could let him walk to school or ride his bike. Mm. And we went out searching. And as I've frequently told people, we came upon Port Townsend completely by accident after a multi-city area search. And we stayed in Port Townsend for 24 hours and went back and knew we had found our place. And that was almost 30 years ago.
So were people calling you a California invader back then? Was that a thing going that far back, or is that more recent?
Not really. I think that is definitely more recent. And you know, some people, you know, it was always very interesting to me to go to public meetings and people would introduce themselves by how long they'd been here.
Right.
So I kind of recognized that that was a thing. But once you pass the 20-year mark, I think people are amazed because so many people have been here. I mean, this town has been in transition forever. And so once you start hearing stories from people who were here, came in the 60s or 70s, and then now 90s is so long ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, but it really... It wasn't a thing. I don't know. I think it's a thing now because of our increasingly unaffordability.
Right.
But there was never any kind of angst about where you came from when I first moved here. And we moved here to raise our son. And so he's a local boy for all intents and purposes. He came here when he was about 18 months old. And though he wasn't born here, this is the only town he's ever known. And I got involved in politics. Of course, we all do, I think, because of the kids, as you had mentioned.
Yeah.
With the FCC, you know, it was that and the fact that when I first became a realtor, I recognized how much we should know as realtors about land use planning.
Mm.
And so I started to attend the Planning Commission meetings. You are on the Planning Commission, Paul, now.
Yes.
And I just thought, I never saw any realtors at these Planning Commission meetings, either in the county or the city. And I was so surprised because they were really going to affect the nature of real estate. And I felt like I needed to be aware and educated about, at that time, the comprehensive plans that were being written. And so I started to attend meetings. And frankly, I got involved specifically with joining committees because I was pissed.
Mm-hmm.
as people sometimes become more politically active because of their anger and because of their desire to sort of change systems. And I was trying to build a house and it became difficult. And I thought, this needs to be more organized.
Mm.
And it was in the city. I built my house about 21 years ago. And I was remembering that I had a difficult time. And I thought, you know, there needs to be a better system. And I had been on the Planning Commission in the county during the comp plan and helped write the county plan, comp plan. I was on the Planning Commission in the county for 6 years during a very contentious period.
Mm.
And sort of that's how it got started. And, you know, frankly, it was a really weird little tiny snapshot I was taking my dog for a walk one day, and there was no doggy bags and no trash can where the entrance to the park was. And I remember saying to Dakota, my son, I wonder why they don't have a trash can here. Maybe we should ask. Mm. And we asked somebody who was tending to Chetumoka Park, and they said, well, we don't have trash cans because we found that people were putting their trash from their residence in, so we pulled the trash cans. And I was like, that's not very fair. People enjoy the park, and they need a place to distribute their, put their trash. And I would really urge you to reconsider it. And Dakota was with me, and then the next time that we went for a walk in the park, there was a trash can. Mm. And it was my son who said, Mom, we made a difference.
Mm.
We changed something.
Mm.
And, you know, I, out of the mouths of babe, right? And I went, you're right. We can change things. And that was one of the impetus.
Yeah, no, that's so cool. And, I mean, it's on those smaller levels, and a lot of times working in, you know, as you know, rural politics, it is these minor changes that actually can make a ton of difference in the lives of citizens who live here. And it's a chance to look at issues maybe more in sort of a from a macro or micro perspective. But, you know, I also understand this sense of being involved sometimes in local issues and extremely local issues can take some of the ennui out of like the things we can't control in the larger form worlds of politics, oftentimes that are out of our hands. We can make a difference locally, where, you know, maybe we can't change, you know, anything that's happening on a national or international scale.
Yeah. Well, you know, Port Townsend, when I first started living here, and I worked at Aldridge's when my son was, you know, 2 years old, and I would do the night shift so I could spend the days with him. And I can remember, I thought at one point, where did I move to? Because I would start conversations with customers at Aldridge's. They'd, you know, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. I worked until it closed, and people would hang out and have an ice cream at the counter, you know, that was set up there, or have a cup of coffee or whatever. And I can remember it was Bill Clinton who was president then. And I remember saying to somebody, hey, he appointed David Gherkin to his cabinet. And he was a Republican. And I said, isn't that interesting? And people were completely unaware. Everyone I spoke to just really didn't pay attention to national politics here.
Hmm.
And I thought, wow, okay, that's interesting. And what a difference from today.
Right. Because you'd say it's the opposite these days, right?
Yeah. And I think that a lot of it was that people, you know, everything was sort of moving along at the national level. There was not too much outrage. And people just really kind of considered local the end-all and the be-all here. And when I first got on council, when we talked about lobbying our state representatives or even doing any kind of resolutions about any statewide changes or national considerations, there was a movement amongst the council that said, we don't get involved in state and national issues.
Mm.
And 9/11 really changed everything.
Mm. That
9/11.
How
9/11,
so?
You know, I think it probably wasn't. I mean, obviously, 9/11 changed everything for America in many ways, but just in terms of the way that it affected local government, is I think people, the way we responded to it, started to distrust government.
Mm.
And particularly at the local level, that's the way that people have a voice and an in, the ability to speak to your local representatives. And that's when I saw over the years, gradually, the distrust beginning and the conspiracy theories and the anger and a desire to make their voice known. And I've just seen so much more nastiness I guess, at the local level, even though we had our land use arguments, it just became a much more bitter way of doing business. And so, it definitely saddens me, but that was, I really just saw a change start to shift as the years went on after that.
That's really intriguing. I haven't actually thought about it this way, but you're absolutely right. I think about the Loose Change or whatever series of documentaries that came out claiming 9/11 was a planned, 9/11 was an inside job, all of that. And the vitriol, around Bush, and of course we're being brought into another war and all these things, really almost dovetailing with the rise of increased communication, the web 2.0, and the increase of the simplicity of communication, the ease of communication, that doesn't necessarily require personal responsibility. I mean, it really was starting to happen right around 9/11.
Yeah, and also the fact that Homeland Security came in, and there was just a lot more nervousness about being surveilled, and just a lot more angst about what the federal government was, how they were involved in our lives.
Mm. Well, so and now you've been mayor of Port Townsend for a cumulative how many years?
Well, from 2008 to 12, and then was started again last year, 2020. So two terms, and then this is my, each term was 2 years, and then this is my last year on my second my second year of my very last term.
Right.
This is the third time that I have been voted on by my colleagues.
And for listeners who don't know, Port Townsend has a what's called a weak mayor system, which is not to say that you're weak, Michelle. no comment on that. But where you are on the city council, and then your peers on the city council elect you to be mayor. But there are considerably less duties than, like, say, the mayor of Seattle would have, because we have a city manager who handles many of the day-to-day tasks of running the city.
That's correct.
So
and significantly less pay, I will say.
Right.
And the reason that I bring this up is one day I'll come back on Filter to talk about the need to change that.
Mm. Yeah,
because it's a significant issue if we're going to have representation from the greater constituency of people who can afford to spend a lot of time on council and at all of these meetings and get paid $500 a month.
Mm. And $700 if you're the mayor, right? So you really, you're earning that extra $200.
Yep.
So is there a marked difference between being a mayor, being the mayor, and being a city councilor?
Yes, I would say, especially in times of crisis. And interestingly enough, the first time that I was mayor, our ferries had been condemned. So we had no ferries on this route for a period of time. And we had the bridge closure for 9 weeks at the Hood Canal. And then, of course, it was the Great Recession. And we had a lot of businesses closed and a lot of empty storefronts downtown. Banks collapsing and all of the different things that happened then.
And you got to be the mayor for all that?
Yeah.
And now you get to be the mayor during COVID?
Now, during COVID and all of this. So
it's ought to learn you for being mayor in the future.
Yeah. Oh, as Jeanette Forrest said to me, does this mean you're Typhoid Mary?
Typhoid Mayor?
So during crisis periods, there's a lot more meetings, a lot more consideration. And thankfully, I would say this time around, there's a lot more collaboration between all of the governments and all of the electeds, trying to get us out or the, you know, the revitalization at the end of COVID. So that means more meetings.
So more meetings equals the same pay that you were getting before the meetings, of course. And yeah, I think we should totally talk about that, because I think it's also connects to what Bruce Cowan and I talk about a lot, which is we, you know, encouraging folks to run for office, but you can't really encourage folks to run for office, especially the folks we need to run who are, you know, people who are working, you know, raising families. You know, we need to, there needs to be incentive for people to be involved in their government. Otherwise, it's just going to go to folks who are able to spare the time, you know, which isn't necessarily a representative swath of Port Townsend.
That's exactly right. You won't have working people.
Well, let's take a little musical break. As many of you know, if you know Michelle, she's a big fan of Bruce Springsteen. And maybe you could just introduce your love for Bruce and then the song that you chose for us today, Michelle. You're back on Filter. We're talking to Michelle Sandoval, mayor of Port Townsend, queen of my heart. Wait, did I say that last one out loud? And huge Bruce Springsteen fan who brought us that one from his latest album, Letter to You. How many times have you seen Bruce live, Michelle?
Not sure. Never started keeping track. First time I saw him, I was 15.
Oh, man. Wow.
Long time ago.
Yeah, and you don't have to say when that was, but it was probably like 3 weeks ago, though, I imagine. God, I'm schmarmy. But that's, yeah, that song's great. I love Bruce. I think I kind of grew up with, you know, people telling me that Bruce was, you know, that was silly, and it was just kind of like, I think it was one of those things as a teen, I judged it before I really listened, you know, and then now I'm just like, oh yeah, like he's just a consummate musician, you know, all over the place and just a great writer, great performer, great all around rock and roll god. So,
thanks. Yeah, do I miss live music, boy.
Right?
It's tough.
And will it ever be the same again? You know, could you ever imagine yourself standing shoulder to shoulder with a huge crowd of people ever again? I mean, I don't know if it's ever going to be the same. I hope I'm wrong.
I mean, I sometimes see movies or TV series and I see a crowd of people and I think, oh my God, they're not wearing masks.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, it's really sunk into our consciousness and it's an odd thing we're living through.
Yeah. It is a complete, not even a schism. It was a cataclysmic event, and definitely in the second hour with George, you know, she's got a lot to talk about in terms of grief over the pandemic and over what's, you know, what's kind of happened to our consciousness in this time. One thing I did want to talk about today with you, since we got you on the line, is, you know, thinking about how, you know, Port Townsend was already in an affordable housing crisis before COVID hit, you know, and now, you know, there's just, I think we're starting to see the effects that not only COVID's had, but just sort of the difficulty in affordability in Jefferson County and Port Townsend in particular affecting folks. Yeah, I wanted to talk to you briefly about, you know, what's the city doing? What are the issues that the city actually can address? Because I think sometimes people forget that the city doesn't have unlimited power to make, you know, we can't just go ahead and have rent control. We can't just go ahead and, you know, you can't go ahead and solve all the problems necessarily. You have to actually be pretty creative in terms of how you solve the problems. So what's this time like for you, you know, leading the city once again during crisis? And how are you thinking about homelessness as an issue in Port Townsend and what can be done about it?
You know, it's one of those issues that until it's confronting us in really obvious ways, the income inequality and the unattainability of stable housing for so many folks, I think that so many people just didn't understand 4 years that it was coming to this point.
Mm.
And that's what, you know, I never think of myself as old, but I think that in many ways, having a perspective of being a 60-year-old, you see that there's points of that great action was needed, that the change was coming, and so many people didn't recognize it then.
Mm.
And now it's the big city problems have come here. Mm. And now people are concerned about it, and perhaps for the last 3 years. But, you know, so much of the concern, the changes that we could have made really needed action 10 or 15 years ago.
Right.
And I think that as a people, maybe it's all humans, you know, that we're reactive instead of proactive.
Mm.
And, you know, the problems that are really hurting this nation now started 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And specifically in regard to the mental health issues, which are a big part of not only our police patrols, but play a part in homelessness as well.
Speaking of Reagan, and, right?
Yeah, that's right. The first act he did was to cut the federal funding for mental health. And the mental health hospitals were closed down across the nation. And I owned a restaurant in Ventura, California at the time, and all of a sudden everything was privatized. So these halfway houses sprung up in all of these places all around our restaurant, and all of a sudden we started seeing people who were in their pajamas and barefoot wandering around and coming into our restaurant for coffee and with smoke constantly, you know. And that was a time that created where we are today.
Mm.
And, you know, Washington State has also played a huge part because we don't have the capacity for mental health support. And so that's just one part of the homeless issue. But in 2005, the city started an investigation about the unaffordability of housing. 2005.
Right.
And it was a joint city-county effort that during the recession was put on hold because, you know, nobody could afford to pay the staff to continue with these meetings. But way back then, we had the Happening Plan, housing affordability plan, that said this is what the city and the county should do. And still, things haven't been implemented to the satisfaction, certainly of me, but of the plan. And, you know, I can remember defending my position some 5 or 6 years ago about my strong anti-Airbnb. Mm. And people would call me and say, don't you see this is a good thing? We can make, you know, we can make up our income and people can come and live in a neighborhood. And I kept saying, this is going to create a huge problem for long-term rental. And these were friends that were calling.
Mm.
These were people that didn't understand the repercussions of something as simple as not having rentals, because instead we have hotels everywhere in residential areas. So the city went ahead and stood by and said, we're not going to allow this without very specific matrix, you know, criteria. You can live in the house and it can be attached to your house, not separate ADUs, et cetera. So that's one thing that the city has done. The city alone.
Yeah.
Not in the county.
Right.
The other thing that we did was some 5, 6 years ago was start to waive the system development charges for nonprofits. And those have reached the point that they're about $11,000 for city and water system development charges that Habitat has been able to not pay, you know, for their buildings, for their construction of their 51 homes. And then there's the permits that we will defer as well. So while that doesn't seem like a big thing, it is a big thing.
Yeah.
In terms of the amount of dollars that the citizens of Port Townsend are supporting affordable housing by waiving those fees.
Yeah.
And in addition, the Housing Task Force of the city, as well as the Planning Commission, has done an awful lot of changes to their code in order to allow changes for more affordable housing. But to be clear, you will never get affordable housing in this country without subsidy, period. And that is the, you know, the access for affordable housing and the ability for government to step in this capitalist society is the way to forestall homelessness. And so once people don't have stable housing, and even if they're sleeping on people's couches or in the basement of their parents or whatever it is, you know, homelessness is not that far away.
Right.
And, you know, I think that your next public forum about this, the providers will talk about the demographics of who's homeless. And I just think that over the time that from 2005, when we first started that investigation, you know, 16 years, what we could have done if we would have taken it seriously then. But as I said, it's very difficult for people to understand what's coming down the pike. You know, I think that we all live in a certain amount of denial, as we've seen in the last 4 years, about what happened at the Capitol on January 6th. It was like, no, this isn't possible. This isn't possible, until it finally is reality.
Right.
And I think that we, you know, we're always sort of reacting as opposed to being proactive in order to forestall catastrophe. And this country, unfortunately, equates homelessness with some sort of moral failing of that individual. And it's a moral failing of this society.
Yes.
And I've been pretty darn poor, and I've been lucky enough to be able to move into my parents' house at one time when I went bankrupt, and I had a kid and two dogs and two cats, and at least my parents could house me. But I think that there's a lot of judgment that goes with that. And I think that that's where we need to get off, you know, that kind of, I just think that most people don't understand that, it can happen to any one of us.
Yeah. We're only so many paychecks away from it. And, you know, and then we just
and a car accidents, like it happened with me, medical bills that cause you foreclosure or bankruptcy. Those kind of things are what can push people into unstable housing or homelessness.
Well, you know, I know we got to wrap up our time soon, but, you know, one of my lately, I don't know if you can help with this or just agree with me or maybe just tell me I'm wrong. But, you know, I feel the more I think about, I feel like I have less hope than I did. I have less optimism about finding ways around it. And, you know, we're both realtors. We work in this environment where, you know, especially seeing how desirable Port Townsend is, it's like you say, without subsidy, without really, you know, the ability of some entity to step in and just spend a ton of money without any expectation of return on creating units of housing for people. I mean, is there some kind of light at the end of the tunnel? I mean, I know there's development of apartment buildings going on. I know that would be that could be hugely beneficial to taking some of the weight off. But, you know, is Port Townsend just going to be, you know, inaccessible to people without a certain amount of money from now on?
What I'm optimistic about is that people realize what's going on now. And you could have told them about it for years because the writing was on the wall. But I think now people are active about it. So many people have contributed to, you know, Peter's Place out in Havelock and the building of tiny homes. So many people are involved with the food bank. So many people volunteer in so many different ways that I have great optimism about that. But I think it will take, as a nation, another 40 years to get us out of a place where being poor is categorized as, you know, some person that poor personality trait. You know, the pull yourself up by the bootstraps sort of mentality, I'm hoping is changing. And so I have great optimism in that regard, but I don't think it's going to be in my lifetime that we can solve this issue unless people change, you know, their judgment about the inequality. And so, you know, yeah, I will just say something. My mother, who was born in 1918 and died at 100, so she was an old mom when she had me, but she died about a year, a little over a year ago. And she lived here in Port Townsend for a couple of years in 2005 and 6. And she would drive around with me, and she said, "This place is going to be like Carmel, and nobody's going to be able to afford to live here."
Mm.
And I thought that was really interesting that she could see it.
Mm.
She had seen so many places morph into a place just for the rich.
Mm.
And, you know, and every day I try to work against that, as do you when we're trying to get people into their first home.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that realtors generally are one of those groups that get judgment called against them all the time. But you and I both know that, one, it takes two to tango. So it's not the buyer that's setting the price. They would gladly pay less. It's
yes.
the people selling the home. But also that we really work hard to try to get people into their housing, because it's a good feeling when you can get people into a home.
That's right. That's right. And it is something where, you know, and that should be another topic. Actually, Nat Nichols and I are supposed to talk at some point about, you know, what responsibility do realtors have for home prices? And I'm looking forward to that conversation too. That you and I could probably go on for that. That would probably come off as an advertisement too. So let's tell you how smart we are. Michelle Sandoval, mayor of Port Townsend, thank you so much for being here with us today. Do you have any shout outs you'd like to throw out into the airwaves before we cut your line?
No, my love for the people of Port Townsend. And it's big. It's a big love, as they've held me in their hands during the last year and a half or so in a difficult period in my life.
Mm.
And a shout out to my kids, Nisa and Dakota, who have saved my life.
Mm.
And of course, to my husband, who's been going through his own trials and tribulations, and how much I love him.
Mm. Thank you so much for being here, Michelle.
Yeah. You take care, Paul.
You too.
I love you.
I love you too.
Take
we'll
care.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.